Good morning, everyone. It's time for our staff observers at home and abroad to give you the latest news. This morning, we report from England, Germany, and Washington in that order. All right, go ahead, London.
This is John McBain in London. The Scottish port of Glasgow last night had its heaviest attack of the war. Casualties are feared to be heavy, and rescue workers today were still digging in the wreckage for trapped people. It was the night of the full moon, and the German raiders paid heavily for their attacks. The record number of 11 night raiders were shot down as British night fighters hunted the bombers in the clear moonlight. It made them much easier to find than on ordinary nights. The attacks on the Clyde side were prolonged, and today's communique says that some industrial buildings and many houses were damaged. Hundreds of incendiary bombs showered down, but only a few fires really got underway. And these were said to be out or under control by daybreak. Over Britain as a whole, the attacks were on a large scale. Fires were started in a town in northeast England, and the Merseyside had another sharp attack. London had a raid alarm, but except for a little gunfire, the night was a quiet one. British bombers last night carried out the heaviest raid yet made on the German port of Hamburg. It was the second night in succession that the British have hammered the port with heavy bombs, and it was the 63rd raid Hamburg has had. Last night, heavy bombs fell on shipbuilding yards, docks, and warehouses, and damage is thought to have been considerable. A sign of the urgency of Britain's shipping problem and the necessity for quick action under the Lease Land Bill was the announcement today that Mr. Churchill has asked Sir Arthur Salter, Parliamentary Secretary to the Ministry of Shipping, to go to the United States to arrange for a quick flow of supplies. He will leave at once for America and will work under the British Embassy in Washington. This morning, he was received by the King and sworn in as a Privy Councillor. It was also announced that the Ministry of Food is sending a mission to America to arrange for the sending of foodstuffs from the United States to Britain. The British are somewhat worried these days by the fact that a good deal of valuable military information is leaking out to Germany through America. The well-informed British aircraft magazine, The Aeroplane, today says of America, while that country swarms with Nazi agents, there may be little use in the imposition of a censorship there. Nevertheless, the United States would be doing our cause more good by withholding detailed news of British orders. In this matter, The Aeroplane goes on to say, the Americans are at the opposite extreme to ourselves. While the British censorship is stringently applied to an absurd and sometimes dangerous extent, America tells the world the exact rate of production of her aircraft factories and the dates of delivery of each type of machine. If the Ministry of Aircraft Production devoted some of the energies at present expended in gagging news of work at home to stopping some of the torrents of information which flow to Berlin from across the Atlantic, it would be performing a more useful service. Some stiffening against concessions to Germany is discernible in reports reaching London from Yugoslavia. It seems very probable that Yugoslavia's position in the war may be largely determined by one factor: how strongly the Allies hold Salonika. Yugoslavia has a free port in Salonika, and it is thought in some Yugoslav circles in London that uncertainty about Greece's ability to defend alone what will be Yugoslavia's supply line if she enters the war may have contributed to Yugoslavia's extremely cautious attitude. With that supply line cut, some Yugoslavian military leaders feared military defeat might have been certain. But if the Yugoslavs were sure that British troops were taking up positions in the Balkans, they might look on entry into the war as a risk worth running for their country's independence. The passage of the Lease Land Bill, it is said by Yugoslavian sources here, has had a tremendous effect in Yugoslavia. The peasants have an overwhelming respect for America's power and richness, acquired from tales told by returning immigrants. The fact that the amount of American aid to Britain specified in the Lease Land Bill is many times Yugoslavia's annual budget has impressed the Yugoslavian people, and government leaders, repeatedly told by the Germans that American aid could have no effect on the war, are said to be giving some serious thought to the idea that, in the end, Germany can't hope to win against a Britain backed by America's resources. American correspondents, as well as the British themselves, are getting some amusement out of the tilt between Sir Walter Citrin, the trade union leader, and the Ministry of Information. Sir Walter refused to make a broadcast when the censor cut a bit out of his speech. In Parliament yesterday, Mr. Harold Nicholson said mention of the subject had been forbidden, and to permit Sir Walter to do so would have been unfair to all other broadcasters and journalists. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
That was the news at this time in England on this, the 562nd day of war. Next, we're to hear from our staff of American newscasters covering events in the Reich. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. The air war seems to be on in earnest once more. Following the big attack on Liverpool the night before last, the biggest yet, the Germans claim, with several hundred planes participating, industrial centers in Great Britain, which are not further specified in the earlier reports, were raided on a big scale last night. One of the places was Glasgow, and Liverpool and Birkenhead received a shelling on what are said to have been the grain elevators there. German reports are that the attack on Glasgow was very heavy, and that it was notable because the city has been considered relatively safe from air attack because of the nearby Firth of Forth. On the other hand, we hear that last night's British attack on Hamburg caused deaths and casualties, notably in two hospitals, where physicians, nurses, and patients were buried under the ruins. Hamburg had already been hit the night before. Berliners had a good night's rest last night after the exciting time we had had the preceding night. It was one of the most spectacular raids I have witnessed, and I recall particularly one British plane which I was able to follow from its first appearance on the horizon all the way, seeing it turn after I suppose it had discharged its bombs and return the way it came, and all the time in the center of the searchlight beams and in the midst of a continuous sparkle of bursting shellfire, until it disappeared in the distance as it was apparently uninjured. Nevertheless, the Germans claim that 10 British planes were shot down on their way over Germany that night, and one of my friends saw one get hit and blow up over Berlin. I also heard the whistle of a shell not very far away, a truly terrifying sound, but there was no explosion following it. The Germans say that their excellent flak fire caused the British to fly high, 6,500 feet or more, which made their aim uncertain, and this probably accounts for the civilian casualties that were unfortunately recorded. Sunday is Soldiers' Memorial Day here, and will be observed with houses putting out their flags and perhaps by some speeches, though no promises are made in that connection. In Yugoslavia, it is said that a Crown Council has been held, and the Essener Nationalzeitung, Reich Marshal Hermann Göring's paper, says that it discussed the question of a closer approach to the Axis powers, though nothing has come out yet which would indicate Yugoslavia's joining the three-power pact in the immediate future. Reports that British troops have been landed in Greece are said by the Wilhelmstrasse to be known to it. From Japan, we hear that Foreign Minister Matsuoka has started on his long journey to Berlin and Rome via Moscow. He has arrived in Shimonoseki, and will proceed from there by ship instead of by plane, the weather being unsuitable for flying, it is said. He is expected here toward the end of this month. Japan's improved position in Far Eastern waters is the subject of an article in the Frankfurter Zeitung today, which points out that her presence in French Indochina and her close friendship with Thailand or Siam pushes her squarely between the British position at Singapore and the American at Manila, and approaching very close to the Dutch possessions in the East Indies. America and Britain have definitely said no to a further Japanese advance, but, says the Frankfurter Zeitung, there is a large element of bluff in their anti-Japanese attitude, as their navies are so far from their bases that they could not effectively hold the Japanese up. The German communique, in addition to the air raid news, speaks of a large tanker that is attacked in the Bristol Channel and seriously damaged, and of air fights along the south coast of England in which 6 Spitfires were shot down. In the attack on Hamburg last night, the British are said to have lost 9 planes. No mention is made in the communique of German losses. French automobile production under the German occupation is to be devoted particularly to trucks, says the Brüsseler Zeitung. France will retain 95% of the smaller trucks produced, but of the larger categories, from 50 to 90% will go to Germany. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin, returning you to NBC.
Now let's hear the news on Capitol Hill, reported by Earl Godwin from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. In the midst of a tremendous rolling forward movement in which billions upon billions are piled higher than the heights of the Olympic range, the House stopped in its mad money rush yesterday to make sure that if any more defense workers get government-built homes in which to live, they will have to provide their own electric ranges and electric refrigerators or go without. In all the mad rush and race for armaments, Congress held back nothing yesterday but this little light touch to show that Uncle Sam may be the savior of the democracies when it comes to the rest of the world. As for ice boxes at taxpayers' expense, nothing doing. Your Uncle Sam is just as tough as stewed tripe. I'm giving you now $457 million worth of new defense houses to live in around these Navy yards, camps, arsenals, powder works, shipways, and whatnot, says Uncle Sam. I want you to live like American families should live, in all the dignity of your job. But, you ungrateful wretches, you've got to buy your own stoves and refrigerators. The icebox revolt would be funny if it were not a serious symptom in Congress, which includes a growing circle of members convinced the time has come to scrutinize and limit government spending for domestic purposes. There seems to be at present, too, just one standard, the boys in the training camps. If we're not doing such and such a thing for the boys in camp, why do it for anybody else? Well, that's a natural congressional reaction. But there was no holding back or penny pinching on the battleship program, which became a part of the House calendar from the House Naval Affairs Committee yesterday in a huge spending bill of $3.5 billion for next year's Navy expenses, and that includes the start of the famed two-ocean Navy and six terrific battleships to be started, battleships with a speed and power hitherto unknown in navies. And Uncle Sam, who is now building 729 ships, is looking right straight across the Pacific as he draws these plans and spends the money. That was for our Navy. But the $7 billion bill to carry out the aid to democracies starts on its way. Of course, it has to be written into parliamentary form and explained in detail. Hence, closed-door sessions of the Appropriations Subcommittee, headed by Representative Woodrum of Virginia, who will have the bill out on the floor and possibly passed in one afternoon, and that would be next Tuesday. To pass a $7 billion bill through the House in one session would be a record, and I think that's what they're trying to do. The House, you know, has a well-oiled machine. They don't go in there for long speeches, and the Aid to Britain move is described as an American help to foil Germany in her campaign to starve England by sinking all the food ships. Number one threat facing England, so they heard in the committee, is the destruction of shipping by submarines and airplanes. And to combat this, the American aid will take the form of cargo ships, fighting planes which can patrol the sea lanes, and lighter ships and boats to hunt down and sink American submarines. The government issues a hurry-up call for workmen with special experience and skill useful in certain industries. They ask them to register at state and federal employment service offices, and the drive begins officially tomorrow. The government directs this appeal also to men employed but whose special skills are not being fully used in defense. They're skilled. Manpower shortages of serious nature in aircraft building, such as sheet metal workers, woodworkers, aeronautical engineering, machine shop workers, lathe operators, and tool designers. There will be a great deal more in detail on this during the months to come, but our advice is for you, if you want that kind of work, to register at your nearest federal or state employment agency. And Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
It is early afternoon in Europe, and news of the night's developments is still coming in. So stay tuned to this station for possible bulletins and listen to our many regularly scheduled news broadcasts. This is the National Broadcasting Company.